other means. Thank you.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqarah, recited by Ali Parhiskar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Mathalu alladhina yunfiquna amwalahum fi sabilillahi kamathali habbatin anbatat sab'a sanabil kamathali habbatin anbatat سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of the grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every ear. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Iran's president tells his Russian counterpart that Tehran will give a more forceful response to any fresh Israeli attack on its country's interests. The United Nations says Israel's genocide in Gaza has killed 10,000 women so far, leaving 19,000 children orphaned. And Hamas says recent reports about Israel torturing Palestinian detainees reaffirm the regime's war crimes and genocide against the people of Gaza. Our top story for this half hour: Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says any further Israeli aggression against the country will be met with a more powerful response. We've discussed the Islamic Republic's position following Tehran's punitive attack on Israel in our news review program. Let's take a listen.
And I welcome everyone to a news review program where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. Iran's president has reiterated Tehran's position that it will give a more forceful response to any fresh Israeli attack against Iran's interests. Ebrahim Raisi made the remarks in a phone conversation with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin. He hailed Russia's support for Iran's retaliatory operation against Israel. Raisi denounced the West's opposition to the attack and urged U.S. and its allies to stop supporting Israel's genocide in Gaza if they truly want to de-escalate tensions. Putin, for his part, hailed Iran's move against Israel as the best possible response to its aggression against the Iranian embassy in Syria. He said that Iran is one of the pillars of regional security and stability and slammed destabilizing moves by the U.S. and its allies in the region. Joining us now for our news review program is Khalid Barakat, spokesperson for Masar Badid movement out of Vancouver, Canada, and Paul Larudi, activist, historian, and author, joining us out of Berkeley. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program here. I guess we'll start there in Vancouver with you, Mr. Barakat. Good to have you on the program here. Now, many world leaders, especially, sir, you're welcome, especially in the West, knew how important this move was by Iran to respond to and protect itself from an attack on its diplomatic premises. It would be a horrible precedent if this did not take place. You won't hear these Western leaders condone it. In fact, many have come out and condemned it, but almost all of them, I'm positive, are really on board with the fact that this could not have just been left alone, and really Israel needed to see a response for what it did.
Absolutely. I think the Iranian strike is welcomed by the vast majority of the people of the region and worldwide, because the world has, they know that Israel have been committing crimes against Iran, aggression after aggression, assassinations of its scientists. Israel is the aggressor here, and all these crimes, Israel thought that it can get away with it, just like every time they strike against an Iranian interest or Iranian, a facility. The massacres actually that took place sometime targeting civilians in a rally in Iran, everyone knows that the Mossad is behind it, and U.S. agents, and yet Iran did not respond. And when Israel attacked the Iranian embassy, that was the limit. Iran said that the strategic patient theory is not going to work this time. There will be a zero tolerance, attacking Iranian territories. And so the response is legitimate. It's a moral act, and it was supported definitely by the people of the region.
Your thoughts, Paul, on Russia backing Iran's retaliatory move? As you very well know, both have for quite some time been branded as the bad guys by the West. Both have been victims of Western double standards on so many fronts, especially diplomatically, and both have exercised to a great deal or had violations of their rights, of their patience, of their trust by the West countless times.
Well, what Iran is going through, of course, Russia is also going through. The assault against Russia by NATO and through its proxy in Ukraine. In the case of Iran, the proxy is Israel, and Israel is doing this also for its own interests, as with Ukraine as well. It's doing it thinking that it can drag the United States and the West along with it in order to eliminate Iran as a major adversary. It's a desperate move by Israel, because Israel is now losing. And furthermore, Israel is in a much worse position than it was prior to October 7th. I mean, its relationship to the rest of the world was in many cases friendly, and it was seen as a partner by many nations. It's no longer seen that way by those same nations. Nations have suspended economic activity, academic activity, all sorts of relationships with Israel. Israel is now isolated, and furthermore, it's losing its battle with Hamas. They are shocked at this. So it's despised, and it's shown its weakness as hundreds of thousands of Israelis have left the country for good. So in the case of the relationship between Iran and Russia, they have a common interest in working together.
All right, gentlemen, thank you for both joining us on the program. Stay safe to both of you. Khaled Abadaki out there joining us there from Vancouver, Canada, and Paul DeRudy joining us from Berkeley, California. This brings us to the conclusion of this segment of your news review program. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now.
Moving on, an Iranian official says all Hypersonic missiles, which were used in the country's recent retaliatory operation against Israel, have hit their targets with precision. The comment was made by Sayed Mojtaba Abtahi, the Secretary General of the International Conference on Supporting the Palestinian Intifada. He said major world powers, including the U.S., the U.K., France, and Germany, helped Israel against Iran's retaliatory operation. Abtahi said they had defined 8 anti-missile defense zones in the region to thwart Iran's operation, but failed to do so. He noted that on the whole, 10 countries helped Israel during Iran's Operation True Promise. Abtahi said Iran used ballistic and cruise missiles as well as drones to punish Israel for its attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria earlier this month. In the Iranian capital, Tehran, a group of university students gathered in front of the Jordanian embassy to condemn its government for assisting Israel to repel Iranian attacks against the regime.
We are here to condemn preventing the entry of Iranian drones into the airspace of Israel by Jordan.
Any kind of cooperation with the enemy by any country is legally considered complicity, and that is why we have gathered here to condemn providing assistance to the Israel regime.
Israel has tried to portray its army as an invincible force in the region. It has tried to send a message that no country can attack them, and if they do, Israel will crush them. But, as Brigadier General Salami said, we have now changed the rules of the game.
All these years, Jordan has helped Israel oppress the Palestinian people, but they should know that one day their own youth will not allow them to continue these crimes and cooperation with the Zionist regime. I want to tell Israel that their days of impunity are over. Israel, you have no right to bully anyone, not Palestine, not Iran, or any other nation. You can no longer make threats. You have no right to bully and you have no right to attack. If you do so, you will be destroyed.
The Iraqi people and leaders have hailed Iran's retaliatory operation against Israel, which came amid the Tel Aviv regime's war on Gaza. They say the attack was legitimate and within rights to self-defense after the failure of the international community to condemn the deadly Israeli strike on Iran's consulate. Muslim Salim reports from Baghdad.
After days of anticipation, Iran unleashed a barrage of missiles and drones against Israeli targets in the occupied territories. The legitimate response came after Israel attacked Iran's consulate in Damascus on April 1st, violating all international laws and conventions.
Iran's response comes within the international laws, specifically Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, which gives Iran the legitimate right to defend its national security. The Iranian attack on Israel has changed the geopolitical map in the region, and it was a strong warning to the evil regime.
The Iraqi people, as well as resistance leaders, hailed the Islamic Republic for the unprecedented response, dubbed Operation True Promise, which was within the inherent right of self-defense that entitles any country to protect its diplomatic institutions. Iran's retaliation came after the UN Security Council failed to condemn Israel's attack, which killed 7 members of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps.
The resistance and the people of Iraq surely stand by the Islamic Republic of Iran amid the failure of international community and the UN Security Council to condemn the Israeli attack on the Damascus consulate. Iran had all the rights to defend itself and respond with proper means and timing.
The significant operation clearly shows that Iran will not hesitate to take action against any threat to its citizens and institutions. Now, with its capabilities and military evolution, Iran has significantly changed the rules of battlefield in modern times. Iran's retaliatory operation, which came after a long time of strategic patience in the face of Israeli's brutalities, shows that the Tel Aviv regime's days of hit and run are over, and Iran does not hesitate to exact a devastating revenge on its enemy, despite its all-out Western support. Muslim Salim, Baghdad.
Welcome back. Moving now to the Gaza Strip, where more deaths and destruction have been reported on day 194 of Israel's genocidal war on the besieged Palestinian territory. At least 11 people, most of them children, have been killed In an attack on Al-Maghazi refugee camp in central Gaza, 9 Palestinians lost their lives in a strike on a police vehicle in Gaza City. 5 civilians were killed in the southern city of Rafah. Meanwhile, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees says it has found unexploded 1,000-pound bombs inside schools after Israel pulled troops out of Khan Yunis. The U.S. Israeli genocide has claimed over 33,800 lives since October the 7th. Most of the victims are women and children. The Gaza health system has almost collapsed as hospitals are not spared from the attacks. The regime is also using famine as a weapon of war. Some 2 million Gazans are struggling to get access to food amid Israeli restrictions on humanitarian aid into the besieged territory. Israel's months of genocidal war on the Gaza Strip has not only left tens of thousands of Palestinians dead, but displaced more than 1.7 million others. Most displaced people are in Rafah, a southern city that remains under constant threats of an Israeli invasion. People there say that a ground operation in Rafah will leave them nowhere to go.
It will be a huge problem if ground invasion takes place in Rafah. You can see more than 1.5 million people in Rafah. Where can they go? We can barely find space for each other. Every tent hosts 6, 4, or 3 families instead of one. The least you can find is 2 families inside a tent.
Of course, we are scared, terrified, and whoever says he's not afraid is lying. We can't go anywhere. Mawasi refugee camp can't take more people, neither Rafah. Geographically, it can't take more. We are really worried.
It will be a huge problem if a ground invasion takes place in Rafah. You can see more than 1.5 million people in Rafah. Where can they go? We can barely find space for each other. Every tent hosts 6, 4, or 3 families instead of one. The least you can find is 2 families inside a tent.
Well, the UN has announced that around 1.7 million Palestinians have faced forced displacement in the Gaza Strip since Israeli genocide unfolded there in early October. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights spokeswoman said, "Displaced Palestinians are living in terrifying conditions and are under constant threat." Ravina Shamdasani noted that Israel has imposed illegal restrictions on the entry and distribution of humanitarian aid in the Gaza Strip. She demanded human rights organizations prioritize the improvement of the catastrophic situation in the war-torn territory. The UN also warned about the impact of over 6 months of Israeli onslaught on women in particular. The report of the Israeli genocidal war has left 10,000 women dead, including 6,000 mothers, leaving 19,000 children orphaned. We were earlier joined by journalist and activist Habiba Jaghouri. She says Israel's restrictions on aid for Gaza is a heinous collective punishment and a war crime.
Well, my thoughts, of course, firstly, is that this is a devastating reality that Israel has imposed on an innocent population, mostly consisting of children. The most recent statistic is that because of Israeli restrictions on the flow of humanitarian aid, the humanitarian aid section of the UN funding has been cut into half. Now, 90% of this does go to Gaza. But once it does enter Gaza, Israel is there to destroy it. Israel is there to airstrike water. Israel is there to airstrike and kill people that are trying to collect that humanitarian aid. Such an act of heinous collective punishment is a war crime. We know that Israel does not respect international law, let alone humanity, let alone humanitarian law, let alone decency and morality. Israel right now is what you can say the wolf that's been pushed into the corner and is doing anything and everything it can to try and protect itself and survive, whereas it knows its downfall is imminent and it's very, very soon. It has become the social pariah in the world, and slowly around the world, leaders are backing away from its support, such as most recently when the US President Biden told Netanyahu not to retaliate, that they will not have support retaliating against Iran. What it's obvious right now that Israel has allowed to carry on this horrific genocide of more than 6 months, it's because it aligns with the interests of the US. The US can stop it any time, as resistance leaders have stated and talked about. The US can stop this, but they refuse to because they want to have power over the resources of the region.
That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day He appointed for a rising. To Thee belongs praise, for Thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst Thou willed, Thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to Thee belongs praise, for Thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship.
surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
By continuing to arm the Zionist regime as it engineers a famine in Gaza, the U.S. regime is disregarding its own domestic law, which prohibits the provision of military assistance to states that block humanitarian aid provided by Washington. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Antonio Guterres, the UN Secretary General, has said he was deeply troubled by the reports on the Zionist regime's military use of artificial intelligence tools resulting in a high level of civilian casualties. The UN chief added, AI should be used as a force for good to benefit the world, not contribute to waging war on an industrial level, blaring accountability. Why the use of artificial intelligence would blur accountability is unclear, since human personnel are involved in the development, approval, and use of that technology. The Plus 972 story describes how Israeli personnel made it a policy to strike supposed targets when they were in their homes. One of the artificial intelligence systems used by the military for this purpose is called Where is Daddy? Thereby maximizing civilian casualties. The focus on the technology by which the child-killing regime of Israel is wiping out entire families in their homes serves to obscure that targeting civilians and civilian objects in order to instill terror in the population has been a feature of Israel's most recent major offensive in Gaza. Paul Bigger, founder of Tech for Palestine, said that the use of artificial intelligence should be viewed as a systematization of genocide. It creates the system by which mass murder is enabled and accomplished. Bigger explained that the AI programs used by the Zionist regime serve the exact same purpose as Nazi Germany's concentration camps. They allow Israel to kill automatically and systematically. Additionally, the Zionist regime's rationale for supposedly targeting fighters in their homes, if one isn't already convinced that maximizing civilian casualties is the true objective, is not permissible under international law. According to Itai Epstein, an international law expert, Israel cannot lawfully claim targeting on the basis of continuous combat function. The premise upon which it is attempting to legitimize the killing of Palestinian resistance fighters, not directly participating in hostilities at the time, He added, Israel has automated the removal of rules governing a lawful attack, resulting in colossal harm to civilians and civilian infrastructure. Chris Gunness, a former journalist and past spokesperson for UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, said that the use of the AI system, as revealed by the Plus 972 article, rips up the narrative that Israel has been killing so many civilians because Hamas uses human shields. That propaganda point is frequently trotted by the Zionist regime official and unofficial spokesperson, and has even been parroted by Guterres, the UN Secretary General. Washington's willingness to provide arms and diplomatic cover for this situation has led some, including journalist Sam Husseini, to suspect that for parts of the U.S. establishment, the complete destruction or threat of that as a means of leverage of international law may be an actual goal, not a cost of Israel's genocide in Gaza. While professing to be outraged and heartbroken by the Zionist regime's killing of the world's central kitchen personnel, Biden is not changing his policy of unconditional material support for its slaughter. A blatantly horrific and stupid mistake, one of his senior officials told Politico. The Biden administration is not only gutting the meaning of international law, but also the admittedly flawed institutions that are meant to uphold it. After nearly 6 months of genocide in Gaza, Washington finally allowed the UN Security Council to pass a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire for the remainder of Ramadan after vetoing three previous resolutions. But as soon as the resolution was passed, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, the U.S. ambassador to the UN, claimed that it was non-binding. The Palestinian writer Samer Badawi observed, despite its baselessness, her remark was surely heard in the war rooms of Tel Aviv and Al-Quds. Badawi added, hours after the vote, Palestinians in Gaza reported an uptick in Israeli military attacks, including upon the masses who have sought shelter in the Strip's southern half. By continuing to arm the Zionist regime as it engineers a famine in Gaza, the U.S. regime is disregarding its own domestic law, which prohibits the provision of military assistance to states that block humanitarian aid provided by Washington. Humanitarian organizations operating in the territory have jointly stated that the humanitarian response in Gaza, including U.S.-funded humanitarian assistance, has been consistently and arbitrarily denied, restricted, and impeded by Israeli authorities. Anel Shalain, who recently resigned from her State Department post due to the Gaza genocide, said that her former employer's determination that the Zionist regime was compliant with U.S. and international law makes a mockery of the administration's claims to care about the law or about the fate of innocent Palestinians. The Biden administration will be remembered for abetting the child-killing regime of Israel's twisting of the meaning of international law, including conventions created in the wake of Nazi Holocaust in Europe, so that the industrial slaughter of human rights being would never be repeated. But the institutional complicity in the U.S. spans beyond Washington to the media, who have for decades dehumanized Palestinians and the resistance, universities who uttered no words of condemnation for the genocide in Gaza, to the medical associations that have been silent over the Zionist regime's destruction of Palestinian health infrastructure. The child-killing regime of Israel must be held accountable for its crimes in Gaza, where it has been rewarded with impunity before. The fabricated regime of Israel and complicit regimes in the West must pay reparations
commensurate with the destruction, death, and harm inflicted on the Palestinian people, as Albanese states.
Choose to think better. Welcome to A Better You. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Black and white.
Para los pueblos, para los países.
For people and countries who are fighting for sovereignty, independence, and national liberation, there are certain flags that play a very important role.
Que juegan un papel de mucha importancia. Una de estas banderas.
One of these flags is the International Quds Day, which was proclaimed by Imam Khomeini, peace be upon him, in
1979.
Shortly after the triumph of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. This says that one of the fundamental objectives is the defense of Al-Quds and the expulsion of the Zionist occupiers of Palestine. This flag has been flying for years, and the demonstrations are constantly being organized on the last Friday of the month of Ramadan. Beyond the religious contents, which also has great importance, beyond that, many demonstrations, events, marches are held in different places around the world to point out that the cause of Al-Quds is the cause of all.
Para señalar que la causa de Al-Quds es la causa de todos.
Because it is closely related to the liberation of Palestine and the expulsion of the Zionist occupiers. The occupiers who have no nationality, have no past. But it's just a political movement with certain ultra-religious texts that allows a kind of beachhead of the Western European and the West as a whole to establish itself in Western Asia.
Colectivo occidental, europeo occidental, en Asia occidental. Entonces, en las actuales circunstancias.
So in the current circumstances, where Zionism and the Zionist regime of Israel demonstrate all its cruelty and its genocidal criminal character.
Crueldad, su carácter criminal, genocida. La lucha.
The fight for the defense of Al-Quds and the International Quds Day is totally pertinent.
Internacional de Al-Quds es totalmente pertinente. Adquiere gran importancia no solamente para el pueblo palestino que es el.
It acquires great importance not only for the Palestinian people who are the first interested in the defense of Al-Quds. but for all the Arab peoples, Muslims and non-Muslims, for all the nations of the world.
Porque la lucha.
Because today, the fight against Zionism is part of the fight against imperialism, against fascism, and against Nazism. Because Zionism is synonymous with Nazism.
No tiene otra explicación. Es por eso que frente a un nuevo aniversario.
It has no other explanation. That is why, at the new anniversary, we once again pointed out that we stand for free Palestine, Palestine will win, Zionism will fall, and that all the demonstrations that have been carried out in the last years, as well as those of this year, are in constant support of Palestine, and all have a supportive nature.
Palestina, en apoyo de carácter solidario, tenga en esta fecha. En el Día Internacional de Al-Quds, un momento.
To this date, International Quds Day has been an outstanding and special moment. The man who speaks to you and this program is not neutral, and that is why around the date of Quds, we are giving it an international character. We get involved and call on all nations, all true progressives, those who fight for sovereignty and independence for social justice, to continue demonstrating on the International Quds Day.
Por la justicia social, a estar en el Día Internacional de Al-Quds, manifestando.
Al-Quds is the common cause of all of us.
De todos nosotros. Los pueblos del mundo.
The people of the world who are in the struggle, we raise the flags, and Al-Quds is one of them.
Al-Quds es una de ellas. Esto es.
This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Soy Eduardo Artes. En la historia de los pueblos y en sus luchas.
In the history of nations and their struggles, there are conditions and events that are indicators and unifiers. One of them is the call to hold the International Quds Day, a day of common concern for all.
De Al-Quds, el día de la causa común de todos. Para hablar y profundizar sobre.
To talk and go deeper about this, we are in Santiago, Chile, with Nicola Areva, a Palestinian-Chilean presenter of an important radio program called Open Screen. TV panelist, conference organizer, first coach of the professional Palestinian national football team, and former head coach of the Chilean team Palestino.
De fútbol profesional de la selección de Palestina. Y también ha dirigido el equipo de fútbol.
International analyst Nicola Areva, welcome to our program, Black and White.
Bienvenido, Nicola, a nuestro programa Negro y Blanco. Gusto saludarte,
Eduardo. Gracias por la invitación.
Nice to greet you, Eduardo. Thank you for inviting me. It makes me happy to be on your show. I think it is a very important program, a literate program. I'm very happy to be here with you, and it's an honor.
Contigo, así que un agrado.
Gracias, Nicola. Nicola, ¿qué importancia tiene?
Thank you, Nicola. At the current time, when the Zionist regime has a behavior against the Palestinian nation and specifically the residents of Gaza that cannot be described with almost any words, what is the importance of the call made by Ayatollah Khomeini for the International Quds Day, which is actually on the last Friday of Ramadan?
Que hace el Ayatollah Khomeini en su momento del Día Internacional de Al-Quds como el último viernes de Ramadán.
Bueno, tu pregunta, Eduardo, es muy importante, muy interesante y además abarca una serie de elementos.
Eduardo, your question is very important and interesting, and in addition, it includes a number of elements whose meaning is very important to analyze. The first thing is that the Islamic Republic, through Imam Khomeini, issued this fatwa to designate the last Friday of Ramadan as a day dedicated to Al-Quds. This is not a coincidence because many Arab regimes and especially feudal kingdoms entered the American Zionist plan to forget Al-Quds. Why did they have to forget Al-Quds? Because it is the third holiest place in Islam. And on the other hand, by forgetting this holy place, the task of colonization becomes much easier. But this is why the Islamic world and the nations, independent of their governments, do not cope with this issue and are not happy that a place with this sanctity in Islam is under the control of the Western powers and their military tool, the regime of Israel. In this regard, Quds Day reminds the world, especially the Islamic world, that this place is the third holiest place in Islam and is not limited to Palestinians. For this reason, the fact that the last Friday of Ramadan every year is a reminder that there is a holy place in Islam. Nations ask themselves, why should the Palestinians defend it alone?
Si este es un lugar sagrado de todos los musulmanes del mundo, ¿por qué los palestinos tienen que defenderlo solo? Sí, pero ahí es visto también como de los musulmanes en general, pero también, ojo.
Yes, but it is generally considered a place for Muslims. But it should be noted that it also belongs to other West Asian nations. Christian people and non-religious people also defend it as a symbol of fight against colonialism and occupation, which are promoted by Western Europeans. The issue is confronting the Zionist regime, which, contrary to their imagination, has never been chosen. They are the occupiers. Even from a cultural point of view, Quds Day means collective defense of Al-Quds. I believe there is a force that motivates everyone.
Al-Quds. Yo creo que tiene una fuerza que motiva al conjunto de los pueblos.
Claro.
Es que el Quds en la ciudad de Jerusalén.
Al-Quds, or Jerusalem, has two important centers. First, from a religious point of view, there are two very important symbols for Muslims there. But we must not forget that all Christian historical tradition is also there. Now, a very important process that you mentioned is taking place. You explained it well. The Christian world has its own instructions and prayers, and from the cultural point of view, the Christians of Palestine gave their culture to the Muslims, so there is this cultural chain connection that is from the East, and suddenly a completely diverse Western culture appears there, which is completely destructive. This culture is very far from the characteristics of the Eastern culture. This Oriental culture is not as specific to Palestine and West Asia only, but it also reaches the Far East because the Arab and Ottoman empires existed in West Asia, Central Asia, and multiple in this region.
Asia Central, o sea, hay una cultura que se masificó en toda esa zona.
Así es, incluso.
Yes, that's correct. There are even celebrations of the International Quds Day from Caracas to Paris. It exists in all the capitals and important cities of the world. We'll take a break and be right back here with Nicola Areva.
Una pausa y volvemos inmediatamente acá con Nicola Areva. Regresamos con Nicola Jawa acá en nuestro programa Negro y Blanco. Nicola.
We are back here with Nicola Areva in Black and White. Nicola, why don't you give us your opinion about the importance of World Quds Day in this current situation? A situation in which Zionism and the Zionist regime, as the tip of the West's arrow, are committing murder, destroying a nation in the Gaza Strip, and committing the genocide of the Palestinian nation state.
Es contra el pueblo, nación palestina. Eduardo, el caso hoy en día cobra ribetes mucho más importante que nunca en la historia.
Eduardo, this case is more important today than at any other time in history. First, the current situation is not caused by October 7. Its history goes back much further. And the importance of Quds is not only due to the Eastern religious and cultural issue, it is also important for Westerners and especially for Zionists. They're trying to take control of Al-Quds and have been preparing for it since long ago. The reason is economic. Jerusalem al-Quds earns about $30 billion a year in religious tourism. Obviously, in the Zionist world, the Jews consider this to be their own. They never had any love for Christ and the Christian religion. They said that Christ was not a clergyman. So what are the interests of Zionism in controlling Jerusalem al-Quds? Nothing but $30 billion of religious tourism income. On the other hand, they had a well-prepared plan. The first thing that they did in Quds was to destroy a cemetery that belonged to the Prophet's era, and many people from the Prophet's era who were buried there had their graves destroyed. Why did the Zionist government do this? It did this to see the reaction of the Islamic world to this great aggression.
Aggression. Porque esto es una agresión tremenda.
This is an attack on the whole world because it is anti-culture and anti-civilization and anti-history.
Ellos pensaban y medían con eso la reacción de los pueblos árabes.
They actually measured the reaction of the Arab nations with this issue, as well as the reaction of the Arab governments, but they saw that the Muslim nations responded with anger. But there was another plan behind the scenes. This plan was prepared by the CIA and Israel's Mossad. They wanted to see how the press, mainly in feudal kingdoms and Arab dictatorships, could suppress their own nation in response to this very important issue of destroying the history of the Prophet of Islam. For example, one can never imagine that one day a Christian cemetery with all the people of the time of Christ will be destroyed. If this happens, the Christians will react strongly. This was the first issue. The second issue was the control of al-Quds. For this, they had the support of the feudal countries and the dictatorships of the Arab world, and the Palestinian nation was resisting. Now, if Zionism can establish its control over Quds and in this way enjoys the company of feudal and traitorous kingdoms in many Arab countries, then the Palestinian issue will lose its main essence. Because if you pay attention, the heart of the struggle to defend Palestine is the issue of defending Jerusalem al-Quds. They want to take away the flag of the resistance struggle, which is the recapture and protection of Islamic holy places. The Islamic movement has power in the Palestinian nation. Today, the Islamic Jihad, Hamas, the Popular Committee of Resistance, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, constitute the Palestinian nation. Among these groups, three groups have progressive Islamic tendencies.
Pero tres de esos son de tendencia islámica progresista.
Sí, pero ojo. Fíjate que aquí una situación bien interesante.
Yes, but we must note that there are interesting conditions here. I have seen pictures of Hamas members taken with Christian symbols. This is becoming a Palestinian national issue. And as you say, well, the fate of Quds is the fate of the Palestinian nation. That is why they do this dirty work and want to destroy the structure of Quds, which has Arab-Palestinian roots, and give it a Western face. This is what Zionism is doing today.
Darle un carácter occidental de acuerdo como lo está haciendo hoy día el sionismo.
Bueno, hay una apropiación cultural originaria.
Yes, the Zionists are trying to take ownership of this deep-rooted and rich culture. For example, they've tried to make Palestinian food culture their own. We see that in Europe and even in Chile. They say that falafel, a local Israeli dish. But Israel doesn't have local food because they come from Ukraine, Russia, Poland, Moldova, Argentina and America. I don't know a food culture that is multinational. So what they did here was take over Palestinian food culture and present it as Israeli food culture. Eduardo, this is not a coincidence. Zionism wants to turn all these different nations into one nation and create a nation state. Zionism finishes the work of the Jewish religion and turns it into a national nature, destroys the universality of the religion, and limits it in a territorial area. With this, the first enemies that Zionism currently has are Jewish religious people. There is the Neturei Karta organization and other organizations that fight against irreligious Zionism because it is destroying the Jewish religion. Therefore, if they do not have Jewish and Christian religious roots and they're not Muslim, then why should the Zionists seek to take over Jerusalem and Quds? It is very clear. They want it there for billions of dollars of religious tourism money. Unfortunately, what some feudal kingdoms have done is that an evil character who happens to be the son-in-law of Donald Trump, named Jared Kushner, has employed certain businessmen from the UAE and Saudi Arabia in joint businesses, and they have proposed to create a hotel system in Quds, Bethlehem, Jericho, and Ramallah. This work was proposed by Kushner's initiative for the future Zionist capital. On the other hand, Jared Kushner brazenly announced that he wants to create a tourist center in Gaza in the future. They want to turn Gaza into a place like the Caribbean. Finally, all this can be summed up in one word: wealth accumulation. Everything is summed up in this. But the survival of the Palestinian nation is not for the purpose of amassing wealth, but in resistance or martyrdom. For this reason, the Palestinian nation is fighting. They're fighting in a way that no nation has ever fought like this in history, except in the case of Stalingrad in the Soviet Union. Similar events happened with Gaza at that time. There is no better historical example for Gaza than the Stalingrad of Palestine. Now, as the defeat of the feudal kingdom and traitorous Arab states and the clarification of the issue for the Arab nations, today's situation has made it very clear that the struggle of the Arab nations begins with the freedom from the dictatorship of the feudal kingdoms, and this is how they can enter into a transformation process in West Asia. We see that the most terrible and disastrous dictatorships in the history of mankind, which the West supports. And the interesting thing is that all the things that they unfairly attribute to Islam and everything that they use to distort the image of Islam in Arab countries, such as the treatment of women in those countries, the treatment of women is very terrible. These actions are carried out exactly by the allies of America and Israel. In Iran, women are respected. Women have a high participation in parliament, universities, scientific centers, health, and armed forces. It is the same among the Palestinian people. Women fight side by side with men and take up arms. In Syria and Iraq, we see the same thing.
Lo mismo el pueblo palestino, la mujer luchando junto a su hombre, codo a codo y con el arma en la mano. En Siria, en Irak.
Las turquías. 60 segundos, un minuto.
60 seconds, 1 minute for your last talk about Quds and the current anti-Zionist struggle at the global level.
Antisionista a escala mundial, ¿por qué no decirlo?
Un mensaje para los pueblos árabes, musulmanes, islámicos.
I have a message for the Arab, Muslim, and Islamic nations and the free nations of the world. All I can say is that if Zionism and America can defeat the Palestinian resistance, which will never happen, it means defeating the third world nations, defeating humanity, defeating honor and defeating respect, and defeating humans and mankind, and the nations of the world will plunge into a period of terror. Tolerating what is happening in the Gaza Strip and not coping with it first means the suicide of all international organizations. I mean the United Nations, the International Court of Justice, the International Criminal Court, and certainly the whole of humanity.
En definitivamente a la humanidad.
Así es.
Yes, that is right. The issue of Palestine is the issue of the whole world. Nicola Areva, thank you very much for being here with us in Black and White.
Será hasta una próxima oportunidad.
No, I thank you. It was a pleasure for me to be present in such an important program.
Thank you, Nicola.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio, old ladies from all around the world. Welcome back to your own program, Muslim Lady. This is Asma. I have the honor to be your host once again. Yes, welcome to your own program. As usual, we're going to talk about the issues that are related to all the women out there. And in today's episode, we have Sister Nahid with us to help us with the topics. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome.
Assalamu alaikum to you and all your dear listeners. I'm so glad and pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you very much for being here. How are you doing?
Good. Everything is going okay.
So that's perfect. So the great people and the greatest scholars have always talked a lot about women, and the way they look at women is very important in different societies and in different communities, because they are setting the foundation for the society to grow in a better way, to grow in their improvement, actually, and to flourish. When it comes to the Islamic Republic of Iran, then the two greatest scholars and, of course, the prominent leaders of this Islamic Republic, as Ayatollah Khamenei and Ayatollah Khomeini, both have got so much of words regarding women. In today's episode, we're going to actually cover some of their words and some of the points of views they have regarding women.
Yeah. First, I'm going to start with Ayatollah Khomeini, the founder of Islamic Republic of Iran, who held a strong beliefs about the role of women in society based on his interpretations of Islamic teachings. Women were a symbol of divine beauty in Imam Khomeini's thoughts, as he also had a close connection to his own wife. And we have too many narrations, too many stories, too many memories in his books. As you know, he was also a great writer, both of them.
Exactly.
Imam Khomeini and
poet,
Ayatollah.
A great
poet.
Yeah,
exactly. And also Ayatollah Khamenei, they write too many books that are just like role models for our young generation.
Exactly.
And women are just the symbol of divine beauty in the view of Imam Khomeini and in his relation to his own wife as well.
And also he has a book, Ayatollah Khamenei has got a book which is so nice about human beings entirely and generally, like the 1,000-year-old human. That's a very beautiful book, just as a side note for everyone who's interested.